theater of thrills, suspense. Tonight, the story of three women and their vigil of death. We call it Waiting. So now, starring Vivi Janis, Helen Cleave, and Charlotte Lawrence, here is tonight's suspense play, Waiting.
Want me to put butter on them, Eileen?
I don't care. I told you I don't care. I'm not hungry. I couldn't eat, not now. I don't see how you can.
But you've got to. It's no good going on like this. Is Harriet coming?
I think so. She said she would.
Well, I hope she gets here soon. Everything will get cold.
Stop it. Why don't you stop it? How can you talk as if nothing's happening? Nothing's going to happen.
Come in, Harriet. I was just wondering if you were going to be late.
Does it make any difference?
Oh, now, you mustn't talk like that. Life goes on. I know it's hard to see that now, but you will. Time is kind to us.
Mr. Mailer is still trying to see the governor.
Let me take your coat, dear.
I'm going to call here in a little while.
We mustn't give up hope.
Mrs. Martinson, could I have a drink?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't really know if there is anything, you know, since I...
I'm sorry. It doesn't matter. Where's Eileen?
Lying down. I've got some nice dinner ready, Harriet. Why don't you see if you can get Eileen to have some? It'll give her strength, poor dear.
All right. Hello.
Oh, Harriet. Harriet, I can't stand it. I can't.
I know.
No, you don't. You're only his sister. I love him. I'm his wife.
I'm his sister, and I love him. I know.
Can't they do anything? Did you see Mr. Mailer?
He's trying. He's trying to see the governor.
Oh, but there's no time. There's no time.
There's a witness flying in from Mexico tonight. He says he saw a woman coming out of the building that night about the time that she was supposed to have been killed. Mr. Mailer thinks he might be able to get a stay of execution on the strength of it.
Oh, it won't make any difference. It'll be like all the others. There was no proof. Just Norman and that terrible diary.
Eileen, do you honestly think he didn't kill her?
Of course he didn't. I know he couldn't have done it. I couldn't bear thinking anything else.
But you sometimes do think something else.
No. No, I love him.
He wrote me a letter. I got it this morning. I want to read it to you.
Ma? What did he say?
Dear little egg, just a note. I feel I can talk to you better than I can to Eileen. I know how you've stood by these past weeks. It's been the thing that's kept me going. I know that Eileen doesn't think I'm innocent. I was a fool to have kept the diary. I was a fool to have gotten involved with Sheila, but... self-recrimination is no help now. It must have been a terrible shock to Eileen, but you weren't altogether blind when it came to seeing the truth of our marriage. I suppose I turned to that poor girl trying to find again what was finished between Eileen and myself. It's too late now, but I wish that things might have been different. Goodbye, little egg. My last brotherly advice. Find a good man. Get married, have lots of nice kids, and be happy. You're the best of sisters. All my love, Norman.
He hasn't written to me.
Hasn't he?
He believes that I think he did it.
Don't you?
I love him.
But you think he did kill her?
I love him.
It's not too late to send a message. Let him know. Tell him you know he's not guilty. You could do that.
He was there. He was with her that night.
He admitted that, but there was somebody else after he left.
You're so sure. You sit there cold, not caring. You're like those lawyers. I'm waiting for him to die. I love him, and he's going to die. You're waiting for an end to something, and you're not feeling anything. Not really. He's your brother, and so he's got to be innocent. Save the name of Landon. That's all it means to you.
That's not true.
Yes, it is. You've always laughed at us, Mother and me. You and Norman always laughing, little secrets. I love him, and he always held something away from me that he gave you. I hated him for that.
Then you can't be very unhappy that he's going to die tonight.
Don't you dare say that. Why shouldn't I hate as well? He's never let me in. Never let me belong. Even waiting now. Waiting for him to go to the check. You keep it to yourselves. I can't even share that.
I'm sorry. I suppose we just don't feel things the same way. Maybe I can't cry anymore.
What's the time?
7.
7. 4 hours.
Eileen? Harriet? Come along. Dinner's getting cold.
I'm not hungry, Mrs. Martinson.
I told you before, Mother.
It's nice. Nice that you two have each other for comfort. We must all be strong, pray together, and hope together.
I'd like to get some coffee. You stay here with Eileen. I'll get it.
Mother.
Oh, yes, dear, I'm sorry.
What's the time?
Nearly 8. I'll get it. It must be Mr. Mailer.
Hello? Yes, Mr. Mailer. Yes? Oh. It's all right. Thank you. Yes, I will.
Governor has refused to see him. He's going to drive to the mansion and try again. He's leaving.
God's will. God's will.
He's leaving as soon as the witness arrives.
A witness? Who?
A man says he saw someone come out of the apartment that night. He says it was a woman. She was running.
He saw the woman?
It was dark, but he thinks he could identify her. He's not sure.
Mr. Mailer brought in a half a dozen witnesses who swore they saw somebody near the apartment. It didn't help. The jury didn't believe it. I think it's unfair.
Oh, please, please, don't talk about it.
Why not? Am I the only one? Am I the only one who thinks Norman didn't kill her? Am I?
Blind not yourself with love to the faults which lie within man. I've tried not to interfere. I've seen what Norman's done to my daughter during the past 2 years, and I've said nothing. It's not for me to judge his acts. That has been done. And a far higher judge will be waiting.
I won't listen to you. I won't.
You can afford the loyalty that age has already squandered.
Why must you quote? Are you afraid of saying something original? Something that'll show what you really are?
That's enough. He's my husband. I don't care whether he killed that woman or not. I want him to live. I love him. He can't die.
That was the second movement of the Symphony No. 6 in F major by Beethoven, played by the Philadelphia Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Bruno Walter. Brought to you on Evening Music Program. The time is now 9:00, and here's a 5-minute summary of the news. State prison officials said tonight that nothing new has developed in the bid for stay of execution by Norman Landon, convicted slayer of Sheila Warner. Landon is scheduled to die at 11 o'clock tonight, approximately 2 hours from now. The governor turned down lawyer's latest plea. According to William Mailer, attorney for the condemned man, a new witness has been found who can shed further light on the case. However, the governor does not feel the evidence is sufficient.
I don't know where it went wrong with us.
You tried, Arlene. Your mother knows you tried.
Maybe I didn't understand. Maybe I was wrong, like he said in the letter. But what did I do? I wanted to make him happy. He'd never let me be close to him. I could never share anything.
It's true, true as I sit here. You did your best. You've nothing to be ashamed of.
Haven't she? Haven't you, Arlene?
No. No, nothing. He's ruined all our lives, what he did. But it's not right. I shouldn't care. Why do I have to feel the way I do about him? He didn't love me. It was that other woman.
If he loved her so much, why did he kill her?
Because it was dirty. Nasty. Because of the liquor and immorality, it always ends that way.
What do you know about morality? Everything's dirty and nasty to you. You tried to make Arlene feel that way, too. You think I don't know what happened to their marriage? I do.
Get out. Get out of this house. You've shown your true color. You're no better than he was. Get out.
I'll go. I wouldn't...
Well?
Hello? Yes? Yes, I'll wait.
Who is it?
Mr. Mailer. He's coming to the phone.
Let me talk to him.
No, I want to. Hello, Mr. Mailer? This is Mrs. Landon, yes. Oh. I see. Yes, thank you. Thank you very much.
What did he say?
What? Mr. Mailer's not going to see the governor. He doesn't have to. Norman's just confessed that he killed the woman.
You are listening to Waiting, tonight's presentation in radio's outstanding theater of thrills, Suspense. Isn't it wonderful the way some people always seem to have the money for extras, car, vacation, weekends away, fur coats, higher education, folks who seem to be in the same circumstances as yourselves? It may be wonderful, but it's nothing you can't have through planned automatic savings, the United States Savings Bond way. Through the payroll savings plan or the bond a month plan at your bank, buy United States Savings Bonds regularly. And now, we bring back to our Hollywood soundstage Vivi Janis, Helen Klebe, and Charlotte Lawrence, starring in tonight's production of Waiting, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
I'll be going.
No, I don't want you to go.
You let her be in this house after the way she's talked to your mother?
Oh, none of us know what we're saying. It doesn't matter anyway.
Well, I would have thought an apology were in order.
I wish I had a drink.
There's something in the cabinet. I'll get you one, Harriet. I want one, too.
Make it strong.
So we did it, after all.
What did you say?
Nothing.
Yes, you did. You said he did it, didn't you?
He confessed. For his soul's sake, he confessed.
I don't believe it.
You don't want to believe it.
He didn't kill her.
He was always drinking. He taught Arlene to drink, and no good comes of it. It's a false strength she's taking for herself.
Where does your strength come from?
A knowledge of right and wrong. You laugh at that. Wait until you're my age.
I think I'll never know your kind of right and wrong.
You just wait. I praise. Go down on my knees that there were no children to see this night.
Arlene, you all right?
Arlene.
I dropped it.
No, don't pick up the pieces like that. You'll cut yourself. I'll do it.
I'm afraid. What's the time?
Nearly 10.
It's the waiting that's the worst. It'd be better if it were finished.
You can't wait till he's dead. Is that what you mean?
Oh,
is that why you're afraid?
Shut up!
Did that make you feel better?
Oh, I'm sorry.
You have to take it out on somebody. It's easier then, isn't it? It always was. If you can get angry enough, you don't have to think about things. Like now, that's why you slapped me. You want him to be guilty. It's better for you now he's confessed, isn't it?
He did kill her, he did.
No. I think he confessed to make things easier for you and for me. Then maybe we wouldn't have to spend the rest of our lives wondering. Not that you're wondering. You know, don't you?
What do you mean?
You know what I mean. Go on inside, I'll make the drink.
A 1,000 shall fall at thy side, and 10,000 at thy right hand, but it shall not come nigh thee. Only with thine eyes shalt thou behold and see the reward of the wicked.
They'll find out who really did it. No matter what happens to Norman, they'll find out who did it.
They already know.
Do they? In half an hour, a man's going to be murdered.
An eye for an eye.
At 11 o'clock, we just sit here. And it'll be like New Year's Eve. We ought to have the radio on so we know the exact time. But it takes a little while for him to be pronounced dead. Completely dead. What is it? A minute? A minute and a half? Do we drink a toast at 11 or 1 minute past?
You should be put away. Talk like that. You're out of your mind.
Somebody else will be sitting, waiting.
There isn't anybody else. Why don't you be quiet? He did it. I wanted to believe he didn't, but I know. He said he did.
I'll go.
Telegram for Mrs. Norman Landon.
Thank you. For you, honey.
You did this.
What is it, dear? Who's it from?
She did it. Congratulations. That's all it says. It's from you, isn't it?
Don't be stupid. Why should I say that? I didn't send it.
Who did?
You're a wicked girl if you sent that. A horrible, wicked girl.
Mother was right. You shouldn't be here. I want you to go.
No, I'm staying. I'm going to wait until 11.
You're getting out.
I've told you I'm not leaving.
Call the police, Eileen. Call the police. They'll take care of her.
What are you smiling at? What?
Don't take any notice of her.
Why are you smiling like that?
I just think it's funny. Calling the police to put me out.
She's gone crazy. Stay away from her, Eileen.
Why are you being like this, Harriet? It's not my fault. I can't help it.
I want to hear you say you believe he's innocent. I'm waiting for that.
Operator, get me the police. Harriet, will you go now?
No.
Mother, hang up.
How do you know such things?
I said hang up.
You hurt my hand.
I'm sorry. It's bad enough as it is. We don't need any more business with the police.
You hurt me. I'm going to my room. And when you've thought it over, you may come and apologize.
She's old. Things aren't the same to her anymore.
Were they ever?
You think I'm to blame for everything, don't you?
Most of it, yes.
You know what it's like? Living with a man you love. Love so much makes you weak and nothing. Realize that when you say things, you don't mean them. But you want to hurt. Do anything to get him to notice. Make him angry, anything. But make him feel something. I never could. You think I don't know why he started going with that woman? I understand. I don't want to, but I do. It's the lack in me. Just the way he said in the diary.
It's 10 to 11.
I hated her so much.
I thought of killing him, but he wouldn't have cared.
You'll be even with them both now.
You can't understand how I love him. There'll never be anybody else.
There's somebody else, all right.
No.
We're a lot alike. The hold others have over us. Norman and I. You and your mother. It's not good to be that close, not for anybody.
Norman and I had each other. Maybe if it hadn't been for you, Mother, we might have...
You didn't. You had a chance and you didn't. I thought you'd tell the truth when you got the telegram.
You said it. It was you.
I hoped it would make you tell the truth.
Arlene? Harriet? It's nearly 11. We must all pray together.
You pray, Mrs. Martinson. I'll watch you. Hello? Yes, Mr. Mailer. Oh, yes, I will. Thank you. The witness arrived and identified the woman from the picture.
Identify?
The governor granted a stay of execution 5 minutes ago.
He won't come back to me. Would have been better if he died. Now I'll have no one.
You knew, didn't you, Eileen?
Yes.
I didn't think anyone saw me come out. I followed him, Eileen. I did it for you. I had to. It was so wicked. Right after he left her, I went in. I tried to talk to her. I did it for you, dear. They won't electrocute me, will they? I know it's against the commandment to kill, but I had to. I think I'll be able to stand everything but the waiting.
Suspense, in which Vivi Janis, Helen Cleve, and Charlotte Lawrence were starred in Waiting. Next week, the story of a little girl and the terror in a vacant lot. It's called The Screaming Woman and is written by a master of fear and suspense, Mr. Ray Bradbury. That's next week on Suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by Anthony Ellis, who wrote tonight's play. The music was composed by Lucian Morowick and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. Featured in the cast were Tom Hanley and Larry Thor. Crime Photographer clicks against criminals Fridays on the CBS Radio Network. You and your neighbors can take a direct personal role in the fight against communism. You can do it by backing Radio Free Europe, the hard-hitting anti-communist network that pierces the Iron Curtain with broadcasts of truth and hope for Soviet-oppressed millions. Radio Free Europe blasts red lies, makes friends for America. Back it with your truth dollars. Send them to Crusade for Freedom, care of your local postmaster. This is WMT, Cedar Rapids. No matter what you need, it'll pay you to shop tomorrow and Thursday in Cedar Rapids during the famous citywide bargain days. Save money like you've never saved before. There'll be bargains galore in every store for men, women, and children. Don't miss your chance to get in on one of the biggest opportunities of the year to save money by shopping in Cedar Rapids tomorrow and Thursday during Cedar Rapids' famous citywide bargain days. Free bus fare in Cedar Rapids to the Loop between 9:30 a.m. and 3 p.m. if you have a coupon from the Cedar Rapids Gazette.
through their bill to cut everybody's taxes by the flat figure of $20 for each taxpayer and for each of his dependents. Mr. Eisenhower is reported ready with some hot words in opposition when he holds his news conference tomorrow. The administration holds that if the measure goes through, it wrecks the chances of a balanced budget by trimming well over $2 billion from federal revenues. The bill got out of the House Ways and Means Committee today by a vote of 16-9 in its favor. Debate is due in the House floor Thursday. House Democratic Leader McCormick predicts it will pass, but top Republican Representative Halleck says, "I think we'll beat it." It looks like the biggest fight of the year coming up between the Democrats and the Republican congressional minority. The president also faces a fight on his proposal for a new network of highways to cost $101 billion over the next 10 years. The federal government, under the president's plan, would spend $25 billion of that, with states and localities supplying the big balance. The president favors financing the program through a new federal borrowing agency, and here's where he and the Democrats part ways. They say the financing features are vague, with one Democratic spokesman calling it financing by sleight of hand. Mr. Eisenhower holds that one reason we need the new roads is to avoid deadly congestion if the time ever comes when we have to evacuate our cities in the face of atomic fighting. That same prospect of atomic war came up today in a Senate subcommittee. It heard defense mobilizer Arthur Fleming propose that Congress set up a new commission and waste no time about it. Its job, to prepare plans for moving prime industrial targets out of prime target areas. Word, too, from the Army tonight that it finds that a blanket of artificial smoke may be at least part of the answer to saving people and cities from the searing heat of atomic explosions, because smoke can reflect that heat just as clouds cut down the heat of the sun. Experiments on this smoke screen protection are underway. The actuality of a nuclear blast boomed out today over Yucca Flats in Nevada. It was only a small nuclear device set off before dawn, possibly an experimental warhead for an atomic missile. But the explosion jarred cities 135 miles away, and the flash showed up in the darkness as far as 400 miles away. Today's test was the second of the 1955 series, with the biggest atomic weapon on hand still to be tested. The Russians put out the word again today, the eve of Red Army Day, that they're ahead of the United States in the production of both atomic and hydrogen weapons. The claim came only 2 weeks after a similar statement from Soviet Foreign Minister Molotov, a statement Defense Secretary Wilson says he doesn't believe. As he pointed out then, there's no way anyone can know. Britain, oddly enough, celebrated in a way today the birthday of the man who helped the 13 American colonies win freedom from their rule. Queen Elizabeth was the honor guest at a George Washington birthday party given by United States Ambassador Aldrich. It was the Queen's first dinner visit to the home of an American envoy, and the first time she's ever taken part in celebrating the birthday of the father of our country and the chief opponent of her proud ancestor, King George III, who gave up a nation for a tax on tea. Another oddment in the news on the birthday of the man who made the telling of truth one of the best-known virtues. In spite of George Washington's maxim that lying doesn't pay, Harvey Mattuso went back on the witness stand before the Senate Internal Security Subcommittee today to reel off what he says were a long list of lies on which he lived for years. And Mattuso went back to his charge that another of the government's leading witnesses in communist prosecutions, Elizabeth Bentley, also lied because she was broke, had to provide the testimony the government wanted, or go hungry. Committee members continue to express confidence in Miss Bentley. They also made it unmistakably clear to Mattuso that he's closer than he thinks to a perjury conviction. Late word on Chicago's Democratic primary for the mayor's office, with machine candidate Richard Daley taking a narrow early lead over two-term Mayor Martin Kennelly, who's running as an independent following an unceremonious dumping by the Democrats. The machine has lost the mayor's chair only twice in the past 67 years, twice the normal number of votes is expected as Chicago settles the bitter fight. Good night. Douglas Edwards in the news is a presentation of CBS News. This is the CBS Radio Network.
This is WMT Cedar Rapids. Can't get enough of those wonderful Rosemary Clooney song stylings? Well, beginning tonight, you'll be able to hear the popular songstress every Tuesday and Thursday on WMT. Rosemary Clooney sings twice a week starting tonight. Be listening at 8 o'clock. Temperature is 29 degrees, and the time, 7:30.
It's time now for Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons.
Hello,
now present Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, at this new time, every week, in a complete 30-minute mystery, in which the kindly old investigator brings us one of his most celebrated cases. Tonight, the case of murder and the revengeful ghost. Our scene opens in a well-to-do home in the suburbs of New York. It is late in the evening as a tall, good-looking man opens the door to one of the rooms. He crosses to his desk in the semi-darkness. Suddenly, he sees a sinister figure, a figure that instills horror in his heart.
What are you? A phantom or a human being? Lift your head and show your face.
You? You've come to carry out your threat.
No. I don't believe you'd murder me. You can't. Don't come near me. No.
You must be Lorna Wade, the young woman who telephoned for an appointment here in my office.
Yes, Mr. Keene, I am.
Now, this is my partner, Mike Clancy.
Pleased to meet you, Miss Wade. Say, boss, the lady's as pale as a ghost.
Ghost? Ghost? Mr. Keene, I've come to you for help. My fiancé, Ivor Stacy's been murdered. He was murdered by the ghost of his dead wife. She said she'd come back from the grave to murder him if he married again. And she has. She has.
Saints preserve us. What's all this?
Miss Wade, you don't look like a girl who believes seriously in ghosts.
I never did, Mr. Keene. But now I do. I know that people can come back from the grave and commit murder. I've seen it with my own eyes.
Just what did you see?
I'll tell you the entire story, Mr. Keene. I met Ivor Stacy 8 months ago. He was a millionaire and the most wonderful person I ever knew. He and I were to be married this week.
Well, then he was killed practically on the eve of your wedding, miss?
Murdered by a ghost, Mr. Clancy. Under the weirdest circumstances. Ivor had been married once before to a woman named Teresa. She died 2 years ago.
Go on, Miss Wayne.
She had an incurable illness, Mr. Keene, and she was sick for years. During those years, she developed a burning jealousy. She imagined Ivor was seeing other women behind her back.
Ivor Stacy, the murdered man, told you all this, I presume?
Yes, Mr. Keene. His wife, Teresa, became a shrew. She wouldn't let him out of her sight. She complained that he did nothing to help her overcome her illness. That he actually didn't care if she died.
And was any of this true, Miss Wade?
Oh, no. Ivor was faithful to Teresa. Until the end. But she didn't believe it. Then, on her deathbed, she made a horrible threat. She said that if Ivor ever tried to marry again, she'd come back.
From the dead?
Yes, from the dead. She'd come back and stop him. She'd kill him. And I think she did, Mr. Keene.
Try to calm yourself, Miss Wade. People don't return from the grave.
But I saw her. I saw a ghostly figure in gray that slipped out of Ivor's house just before I found his dead body.
You really think you saw a ghost, miss?
I saw something, Mr. Clancy. I was bringing Ivor a book he wanted to read. It was almost dark when I got near his house. And from the sidewalk, I saw his door open. And this gray woman walked out. Then she seemed to vanish in the darkness.
You didn't see her face?
No. But when I hurried inside the house, I found Ivor lying on the floor near his desk. He'd been stabbed to death.
Miss Wade, did you tell the story of this so-called ghost to the police?
No. I was afraid they wouldn't believe me. It sounds so fantastic. That's why I came here, to ask you to help me, Mr. Keene. I owe it to the memory of the man I love to get to the bottom of all this.
Suppose you take us to Ivor Stacy's home. I want to see just what the circumstances were.
Oh, Mr. Keene, don't you believe my story?
Yes, Miss Wade, I do. It's your interpretation of it that I question. But we'll soon find out a little more about your fiancé's murderer and the revengeful ghost.
This is Ivor's house, Mr. King.
Miss Wade, just where were you standing when the front door opened and the woman in gray walked out?
Right about here.
Boss, look. The door's opening again.
Yes, Mike. Very slowly.
But no one's supposed to be inside that house right now. I'm frightened.
No one's coming out, sir. But the door just opened and stayed open.
Oh, Mr. King.
And please wait in our car, Miss Wade. Come with me, Mike.
Well, I'm no expert on ghosts, boss, but from what I hear, they don't have to open doors to get out of a house. They can walk right through them.
I doubt if we're dealing with a ghost just yet, Mike.
But there's no one here in the hall, Mr. Keene.
Then come into this room on the right, Mike. Well, this must be the murder room. There's a desk over there. What's this on top of the desk?
Looks like a pad of paper and a pencil, Mr. Keene, sir.
The pad's been scribbled on.
Showing someone's drawn a lot of odd-looking little diagrams on it.
I'll keep this pad of paper for future reference. There's a door over there, Mac. Let's see where it leads.
Boss, there's a man tied to that chair with a gag in his mouth. Here, I'll take off that gag. There.
Thank you. There's a killer loose in this house. He tied me to this chair after holding me up with a gun. I was afraid he was going to kill me.
I'll untie this man, Mink, while you search this house, quickly.
Right, sir.
My name is Keene. I'll have you free in just a moment.
You're Mr. Keene, the famous investigator? Oh, I'm Alec Barnes. I didn't recognize the man who tied me to the chair.
What were you doing in Ivor Stacy's home in the first place, Mr. Barnes?
He was my business associate. His murder came as a terrible shock to me. About an hour ago, someone phoned my home. She said if I wanted to find Ivor Stacy's killer, I should come here.
A woman phoned you?
Yes, it was a woman's voice, Mr. Keene. But a very strange one.
Why did you come here alone, Mr. Barnes?
Alone? How do you mean?
Well, if you thought you were going to meet Ivor Stacy's murderer, why didn't you bring the police with you?
Well, Mr. Keene, I wasn't sure if it was a hoax or not. I didn't want to make a fool of myself by taking the police in a wild goose chase.
Was that the real reason?
Now, look, what reason would I have to... Mr. Keene, he's standing right behind you. The man who attacked me, he's holding a gun.
Don't move, either of you.
Who are you?
The name is Charles Harper, if it'll do you any good.
Charles Harper? I know who this man is, Mr. Keene. His sister, Teresa, was Ivor Stacy's wife. She died 2 years ago.
Yes, my sister died of neglect and cruel treatment. Even while she was on her deathbed, Ivor Stacy was seeing other women. And Teresa swore he'd never marry again. Well, he won't.
You're right, Mr. Harper.
Where is he? I'm having this out with him right now.
If you're referring to Ivor Stacy, you'll find him murdered.
What?
Yes, he's been murdered.
I don't believe it. You're trying to hide him, to shield him from me. Do you feel this gun barrel against your head? Tell me where Ivor Stacy is hiding or I'll finish you off.
Mr. Keene, he means it.
Whether he does or not, Mr. Barnes, I've given him all the information I can.
Don't move, mister, or I'll put a bullet through you.
What?
Drop the gun. Drop it, do you hear? Here, I'll take that gun, Mr. Keene. Well, you had a close call with this fella.
You came back just in time, Mike. Another second or two, and he may have carried out his threat.
Who is he, boss?
He's Charles Harper, the murdered man's brother-in-law.
Oh, Mr. Keene, it was just a bluff when I threatened you with that gun. I had no intention of harming you. I don't know what came over me.
You behaved like a man who was thirsting for revenge, Mr. Harper. And it may have been revenge that drove Ivor Stacy's killer to this crime.
Then Ivor is really dead?
You mean this is the first you heard about it, mister?
He's trying to give us that impression, Mike. But I'm not so sure that I believe him.
Oh, would I have come back here to look for a dead man, Mr. Keene?
You may have returned to look for something the murdered man possessed. Now, that could have been the reason you tied up his business associate, Alec Barnes, here, so you could search the house.
No!
Mr. Keene?
Yes, Mr. Barnes?
Ivor Stacy once told me he had a brother-in-law who hated him.
Did he?
It was this man, Charles Harper. He thought Ivor was mistreating his sister, Teresa.
He did mistreat her. He ruined her whole life.
Well, Mr. Keene, it looks like this fella might have carried out his sister's deathbed threat that she'd stop the husband from marrying again.
Well, that's what I was thinking, Meg.
It was a foolish thing for Teresa to say. She knew well enough she couldn't return from the dead.
But someone seems to believe that she did return, Mr. Harper.
What do you mean?
I mean...
Mr. Keene, wait.
What is it, Mike?
Woman in gray. She's staring in that window. Don't turn around, boss. She thinks we haven't seen her.
What does she look like, Mike?
Well, I can't tell. She's wearing a gray veil over her face. Well, sure, Lorna Wade, who brought us this case, is right. She does look like a ghost. She's gone, boss.
Was she at this window, Mike?
Yes, sir.
Now, there she is, walking away from the house. You remain here with the others, Mike. I'm going to follow that ghostly figure in gray and identify it once and for all.
In just a moment, we'll return to Mr. Keene and the case of murder and the revengeful ghost. Tomorrow and every Wednesday night, CBS Radio brings you thrilling adventure on the FBI in peace and war and the human side of police work on the 21st Precinct. Be listening tomorrow night on most of these same stations when the FBI in peace and war exposes the Specialty Act racket. And when Captain Connelly's hard-working police of the 21st Precinct tackle their latest unusual case, at the Star's address, where America listens most for Mystery 2. Now, back to Mr. Keene and the case of murder and the revengeful ghost. Mr. Keene, the famous investigator, and his partner Mike Clancy are investigating the strange murder of Ivor Stacy, a widower who was about to marry for the second time. Stacy's first wife, Teresa, had sworn just before her own death that if he remarried, she would return from the grave for revenge. And his fiancée, Lorna Wade, now fears that the murder could have been the work of a revengeful ghost. But Mr. Keene has other more logical suspects in mind as he follows the eerie figure of a woman completely dressed in a ghostly gray color. And the end of the trail leads the famous investigator to a small midtown apartment.
Yes?
Are you Miss Amy Fairchild?
Yes, I am. How do you know my name?
It's right here under your doorbell.
Oh.
My name is Keene. May I come in?
What do you want, Mr. Keene?
I'm investigating the murder of Ivor Stacy.
I'm afraid I don't know who he is.
I think you do, Miss Fairchild. You see, I followed you here from his home. A short while ago, you were peering through his window.
You must have the wrong woman.
No. Lorna Wade, the victim's fiancée, identified you just before I started to follow you. She said you were the so-called ghost she saw coming out of the house right after Ivor Stacy was stabbed to death.
Mr. Keene, what do you mean? She saw a ghost.
Lorna Wade mistook you for the ghost of Ivor Stacy's dead wife, Teresa, who swore she'd come back from the grave and stop him from ever marrying again.
I don't know anything about Ivor's murder. Please leave me alone.
You seem to be reluctant to answer that telephone, Miss Fairchild. Are you expecting a call you don't want me to overhear?
No,
Well, if you won't answer it, I will. Hello? Doctor who? I see. No, my name is Keene, Yes, the investigator. Miss Fairchild is involved in a murder case, Doctor. I see. Has she ever been violent? Well, let me get back to you later on, Doctor, and thank you for your information. It may have an important bearing on this case. Goodbye.
Mr. Keene, what did the doctor tell you?
Evidently, Miss Fairchild, you've been under his care ever since you left a private sanitarium for the mentally ill.
They said I was cured, and I am. You've got to believe me, Mr. Keene. Please. Please.
Miss Fairchild, a man has been murdered, and you were seen leaving the scene of the crime. Now, as a mental patient, you'd be under strong suspicion.
All right. I'll tell you everything. Ivor Stacy was my cousin. It was he who had me committed to the mental institution.
Did you resent his doing that?
Well, maybe I did in the beginning. But I'm cured now, and I hold no grudge against him.
What were you doing in his home at the time he was murdered?
I went to thank him for having spent the money to have me cured. But he was dead when I got there, and I left the house quickly to avoid being implicated.
That's when you were seen by Lona Wade, who mistook you for a ghost.
But, Mr. Keene, there is a ghost. I've seen her myself.
You have?
Ivor Stacy saw her, too, several times. And she terrified him. I'm sure it was the ghost of his dead wife, Teresa.
Did you see her face?
No. But I recognized a certain dress she was wearing. You don't believe me, do you?
You had a motive for murder yourself, Miss Fairchild. Revenge. That alone would make one a bit skeptical.
Mr. Keene, when you saw me looking in the window of Ivor's home, there was a man with you. He also had a motive for revenge.
Which man do you mean?
Alec Barnes, my cousin Ivor's business associate. Did Alec tell you that he was forced out of their business by Ivor?
No, he didn't.
Alec Barnes and my cousin Ivor were both fighting for control of their corporation. Ivor won the fight and forced Alec Barnes out entirely.
That's very interesting.
Alec swore he'd get even. And perhaps he did, by killing Ivor Stacy. Do you know why Alec Barnes was there in Ivor's house today?
He said he got a telephone call saying he'd find Ivor Stacy's killer on the scene of the crime.
I made that telephone call, Mr. Keene.
You made the call? Why, Miss Fairchild?
I was hoping to trap him. I thought Alec Barnes would give himself away in some manner.
Fairchild, do you know a man named Charles Harper?
Yes. His sister was Ivor Stacy's wife, who died after a long illness.
Charles Harper is also under suspicion. He hated Ivor Stacy because he said Mr. Stacy was seeing other women while his wife was dying.
I don't think that's true, Mr. Keene.
Now tell me this. Did your cousin Ivor Stacy meet his fiancée, Lorna Wade, after his wife was dead?
Yes. His business associate, Alec Barnes, introduced them to each other. He can tell you anything you want to know about my cousin Ivor's affairs, unless he wants to deliberately hide something from you.
You're very bitter about this Alec Barnes. Why, Miss Fairchild?
He was the first to suggest that there was something wrong with my mind.
Is that why you're so willing to accuse him of murder?
Why do you say things like that? Are you against me like all the rest? Because if you are...
So, you can become violent, as the doctor said. Fairchild, I want you to stay here in your apartment until you hear from me. Don't leave, unless you want to be arrested on a murder charge.
You can't do that to me. I'm not a prisoner. I'm sorry, Mr. Keene. I'll do what you say.
The murdered man's fiancée, Lorna Wade, believes that a revengeful ghost caused Ivor Stacy's death. And you say you've seen that ghost. But I have another theory, which I hope to put to a test very shortly, after I return to the murder house.
Well, how'd you make out, Mr. Keene?
Mike, I followed our ghost to her apartment, and she turned out to be very much alive. Where are the others?
Inside, Mr. Keene. I put them in separate rooms to avoid trouble. And I locked Charles Harper, the brother-in-law, in to be sure.
What's this sheet of paper here on this table?
Anything important on it, boss?
Maybe a clue to this murder. Mike, how long were you and the other two men in this room?
Oh, about a half hour before I sent them inside.
And where were they sitting?
Well, Harper was over there, and Alec Barnes was in this chair.
I see. Mike, I'm going out again for a short time. Let me have your skeleton key, and keep a sharp eye on our suspects. When I return, we may have all the evidence we need to convict a killer.
Oh, you're back already, Mr. Keene. What's in that package you carried?
Now you'll see in just a moment, Mike. Please call the two men in here.
Okay, sir. Step inside, Mr. Barnes. Mr. Keene wants to see you.
Yes, Mr. Keene?
Just a moment, Mr. Barnes. I want Charles Harper, the murdered man's brother-in-law, to hear this, too.
Come into this room, Mr. Harper.
You locked me in. Can't see you're treating me like a criminal.
I'm afraid you're acting like a criminal, Charles Harper. For one thing, you were carrying a gun.
Mr. Keene, he admitted he hated Ivor Stacy. And he had a motive to kill his brother-in-law.
So did you, Mr. Barnes.
What?
You and Stacy were partners in a very successful business. And as I understand it, he forced you out of the firm and ruined you financially.
Are you going to accuse me of murder because of a business transaction?
No, Mr. Barnes.
Because it isn't true.
I know it isn't true.
Well, thank you for that much.
Don't thank me too quickly. You may regret it.
What do you mean?
Mike, you know what doodling is.
Doodling, Mr. Keene? Well, sure, boss. Those are little pictures and diagrams that some people draw on paper to while away the time or when they're talking on the telephone.
Yes, it's usually done absent-mindedly. Do you remember that when we first came into this house, we found a small pad of paper on the desk where the murder took place?
Well, sure, Mr. Keene. It was scrawled with a lot of doodads and crooked lines.
This paper I just discovered here on this table is covered with the same kind of scrawl. And the little diagrams and pictures on both the pad and this paper are alike.
Well, then the same fellow made them both, Mr. Keene.
Exactly, Mike. The murderer apparently idled away his time while waiting for his victim by drawing on the pad of paper. And just a few minutes ago, that same murderer passed the time again in the same fashion.
The man who was sitting in that chair near the table.
Yes. And that man is Alec Barnes.
What?
Barnes, you murdered your business partner, Ivor Stacy.
Do you think you can hold me on that kind of evidence, Mr. Keene?
I have further evidence in this package. Now please open it, Mike.
Why, there's two dresses in here.
Yes. Dresses that belong to the murdered victim's dead wife, Teresa Stacy. I found them in Alec Barnes' apartment. He stole those dresses after Mrs. Stacy died, so he could impersonate her as a ghost and frighten her husband. Alec Barnes was the revengeful ghost.
I think I'd better search this bucko, boss.
You...
What? He's carrying a switchblade knife. Look, you snap this button on the end, and the knife pops out. Look at the size of it, Pop. It looks like there's blood on the blade near the handle.
It's undoubtedly the murder weapon.
You'll have to prove that, Keene.
There's no use putting up a front, Barnes, because I also know your real motive for murdering Ivor Stacy.
Oh, do you?
I found out that it was you who introduced Stacy to Lorna Wade, the girl he later was going to marry.
Lorna?
Yes, the girl who asked me to investigate her fiancé's murder. Mike, I talked to Miss Wade again just before I came in here. She's waiting just outside the door.
I'll ask her to come in, boss. Come in, please, Miss Wade.
Lorna.
Alec.
Has Mr. Keene...
What have you told him? What did you say about me?
Miss Wade, please repeat what you told me on the way over to this house.
I told you, Mr. Keene, several times in the past, Alec Barnes tried to force his attentions on me. He was infatuated with me.
Lorna, you're putting me in the electric chair.
Lorna Wade didn't connect you with the murder, Alec Barnes. Or she would have told me this before. Her mind was only on the fact that a ghost may have been responsible for Ivor Stacy's death.
All right. I'll admit it. I killed Stacy. He forced me out of the firm. But that wasn't the thing that nearly drove me crazy. It was losing you, Lorna.
Alec, I told you I didn't love you. I only loved Ivor.
If it hadn't been for him... Mr. Keene, I thought I could make Lorna love me with Stacy out of the way. Anyway, when I thought I was losing out to him, I couldn't stand it.
So you broke into Ivor Stacy's house and waited for him to return with a 9-inch knife in your hand after masquerading as his wife's ghost. You evidently knew about the threat she'd made, that she'd return from the dead and kill him if he ever tried to remarry.
Yes, I knew. At first, I tried to frighten Stacy away from Lorna by appearing as his wife's ghost. When that didn't work, I used another method.
Yes, murder. Planned in a cool, remorseless fashion. But you gave yourself away when you scribbled idly on that pad of paper while waiting for your victim to arrive. Mike, turn Alec Barnes, our revengeful ghost, over to the police for the murder of Ivor Stacy.
And so Mr. Keene finds the solution to the case of murder and the revengeful ghost. Don't forget, mystery fans, The Man Who Walks by Night, The Whistler, will be heard coast to coast beginning this Thursday night on CBS Radio. Long a familiar figure in eerie mysteries heard by West Coast fans, The Whistler will be yours to listen to Thursday nights on most of the same stations beginning this week. A shady private investigator is double-crossed by his attractive but just as shady girl Friday, leading to a story The Whistler believes you'll find packed with intriguing angles. Thursday night at the Star's address. Stay tuned now for the Rosemary Clooney Show, which follows immediately over most of these same stations. Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, is based on the novel Mr. Keene. The radio sequel is originated and produced by Frank and Anne Hummert. Dialogue by Lawrence Klee, directed by Richard Leonard. Philip Clark plays Mr. Keene. Mr. Keene will be on the air at the same time next week, solving a full 30-minute mystery. So make this new time every week Mr. Keene time on your radio. Next week, hear Mr. Keene in The Case of Murder and The Omen of Death. Your announcer is Harry Kramer. Ride a real squad car with Night Watch Thursdays on the CBS Radio Network.
This is WMT Cedar Rapids. Help strengthen the president's hand as he strives for peace and prosperity for the free world. Take a personal part in the battle for men's minds, the all-important effort to stem the tide of communism without war. Do it by backing Radio Free Europe. This hard-hitting, independently operated American enterprise pierces the Iron Curtain with programs of truth, hope, and encouragement for 70 million captive people. It blasts communist lies about America and the free world. It helps freedom-hungry people resist the mental and physical shackles imposed by their communist overlords. It makes its eager listeners in Poland, Hungary, Czechoslovakia, Romania, and Bulgaria our firm and faithful friends. Back Radio Free Europe with your dollars, your truth dollars. Mail them, all you can afford, to Crusade for Freedom, care of your local postmaster. It's a solid investment for the kind of world we all want.